It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, HBO and CBS are going to begin providing their content for a fee online. So what does that mean for cable companies?
First, worshipped by the ancient Aztecs and revered by the Mayans, the jaguar remains a mysterious and elusive creature even today. Yet that elusiveness may be part of the reason it's managed to survive.
In the 60s and 70s, these big cats had a tough time of it after Jackie Kennedy famously posed in a spotted fur coat. Women went so wild for jaguar fur that over 18,000 jaguar skins were exported from Central and South America. So what brought them back from the brink of extinction, and what will help them survive into the future?
Alan Rabinowitz is with us now. He's a zoologist, conservationist, and the president and CEO of Panthera, a nonprofit organization devoted to protecting the world's 36 wildcat species. His new book is called An Indomitable Beast, The Remarkable Journey of the Jaguar. Alan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
When you were a child, you had an almost mystical experience with a jaguar in a zoo, and it's shaped who you became and your work as a conservationist working with jaguars. What's so special to you about the jaguar?
Well, the jaguar is an animal that's been really close to me through my entire life. As you said, when I was a child, I was born with a debilitating stutter. I couldn't speak at all. And the public school systems at that time classified me as handicapped, put me in special classes, what the kids called the retarded classes. But I could speak to animals. And the animal that I ended up growing closest to as a young man and throughout my childhood was a lone jaguar at the Bronx Zoo, where my father would take me when I would have bad days or bad weeks at school. And I ended up growing extremely, that jaguar was my outlet as a human being. While the adults thought I was broken, the animals listened to me. Now, I never imagined as a young person what my life would be later on, but I did realize that these animals helped me, and I promised as a young person that if I ever was able to get my voice, which I really didn't know if I ever would, that I would try to be their voice so that people didn't mistreat them or kill them or abuse them simply because they didn't have a human voice either.
And you've gone on to make good on that promise. You've devoted your life to the conservation of jaguars. And some of the new things that we've learned about jaguars have come from you, the corridors that we'll be talking about in a minute. And there's some interesting history here as well. Anthropologists found a symbol on ancient Mayan ruins that they believe refer to a jaguar essence. So what is it about jaguars that makes them so mysterious?
Well, that's really hard to put into words, but it's something that I've been seeking now for the last 30 years as I've studied jaguars in the jungle since the early 1980s, late 1970s. At first, my only mandate working for the Bronx Zoo, for the New York Zoological Society, was to get data on jaguars, figure out how they lived, and maybe use that science to set up reserves and protect them. But as I studied them more and more, and as I watched them, and especially as I went on to study other cats like tigers and leopards and mountain lions, I realized over the decades that there was something different. Big cats have a lot of things in common, but there was something different about jaguars. And I could only encapsulate it with the word jaguarness. As I started to go back and investigate what the ancient people, such as the Maya and Aztecs and Inca who lived with the jaguar thought, I realized that some new revelations about their writings and their pictures also implied this special feature in these animals, this jaguarness, which is what they tried to emulate.
What are the biggest threats to jaguars today?
The biggest threats to jaguars, unfortunately, are the same as to all the big cats. It's killing of the jaguars themselves, whether it's out of fear or because people perceive them as a cattle killer or just for their skins, and it's also the killing of the jaguar's prey. A lot of local people hunt the deer and the peccaries and all the other animals that the jaguars need to live on. Thirdly, it's loss of habitat. But frankly, we've been able over the decades through parks and reserves to control loss of habitat at a certain point. What we've been unable to control is the killing of jaguars and the killing of other animals that the jaguars need.
Now, you've established the world's first jaguar sanctuary in Belize. At least you were a big catalyst in that happening. But you've also learned that establishing these isolated reserves isn't the sole answer to helping the jaguar survive. What does a jaguar need to thrive?
Well, once I went back to the origin of jaguars, it was made a lot clearer to me, because the reason jaguars survive today, when most of the other large-bodied cats that they evolved with during the Pleistocene and before have gone extinct, is their ability to move, their ability in response to things like climate change, like any kind of massive environmental perturbations, which happened many times drastically during the Pleistocene ice ages. What the jaguars did at the time, the European jaguar, is it moved. It just kept on going. It never went back. It would just keep on moving forward, trying to find new areas and new places to live. That's why even when the European jaguar went extinct during one of these ice ages, the jaguar still survived, because by that time it had moved already through what I call the Pleistocene corridor over into North America, and eventually evolved into the Pleistocene jaguar of North America and the modern day jaguar. This ability, this need really to move over large distances, not only is what has made this animal so versatile, so resilient, so indomitable, but it's a key characteristic of its survival.
And that's something you're actively working with now. You're trying to establish these cultural corridors and sort of these corridors for the jaguars to be able to move from place to place to keep going, is one of the ways that they've survived so far. Which countries are you trying to include?
Well, it's all of the jaguars currently roam throughout 18 countries, from Mexico through northern Argentina. For both the jaguar corridor, which is a series of land connections that the jaguar moves through, I'm not only talking about good forest. What we ended up learning after decades of work was that there was a jaguar corridor. I didn't make that jaguar corridor. No one made that. The animal made it itself. Even with all the developments, the Panama Canal, roads and bridges, the jaguars still were finding their way through these areas. They swim the Panama Canal. They go over roads and bridges. They find their way from one protected area to another, maintaining the genetic integrity of the species. And that was a major discovery, to find that out, because it changed how we think about jaguar conservation and how we should think about any large animal conservation. But also what I found out was that the jaguar cultural corridor, the way different people who lived with this animal were linked intellectually and spiritually with this animal of their ancestors and that still roamed their lands, the jaguar cultural corridor still existed. While some of the beliefs weren't like the ancient Mayas anymore, where they believed a jaguar to be a semi-god or protector of the underworld, the current people in Mexico and Costa Rica and Panama, they still feel a strong affinity with the jaguar. Those who have lost it feel that something has gone from their lives. Those who still have it feel that while it's only an animal, not a god, it definitely adds strength to their culture and to their lives. This is a major thing that we need to learn, that animals like jaguars help our lives. We don't keep them alive just for our own pleasure. They're actually helping us in our own well-being.
You're obviously still hard at work at this to help the jaguars, still working on conservation and forging relationships between the jaguars and the people and looking at those connections. But do you feel like you've fulfilled your promise that you made as a child to help them?
I, f- I feel like I haven't gone back on my promise. People ask me if I'm proud of what I've accomplished, if I ever get a chance to relax. I never think about that. All I think about is that I'll be doing this till the day I die. That this is what my passion is. Yes, I've not forgotten my promise. Have I feel like I've fulfilled it? No, not yet. I'll never have fulfilled it. I need others. I will pass through this life happily if I know that there are now young people and other people who are carrying on this fight, giving animals a voice. We need to give them their own voice.
Alan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
We've been speaking with Alan Rabinowitz, zoologist, conservationist, and the president and CEO of Panthera, a nonprofit organization devoting to protecting the world's 36 wildcat species. His new book is called An Indomitable Beast, The Remarkable Journey of the Jaguar.
Is it time to say goodbye to cable? There's been a lot of hype during the last 24 hours about the news that both HBO and CBS are launching online streaming services, making it possible to watch their shows without subscribing to a cable package.
The public at large isn't generally a fan of cable companies, one of the most frequent recipients of consumer complaints. Customer service can be so frustrating that one interaction with Comcast even went viral. So it can be hard to tell how much of the hype is stoked by a desire to see cable companies fall and how much of it has to do with actual impending doom for cable companies.
That said, a la carte television from providers like Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Hulu is on the rise. Last year, cable companies saw their first annual decline in subscriptions. Derek Thompson joins us now. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic covering economics and the entertainment business. Derek, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be here.
So HBO yesterday, this morning CBS saying, hey, we'll go direct to the consumer. Is this a big deal?
Yeah, I do think it's a big deal. I think we're at a tipping point right now where you've seen that, like as you said, cable subscriptions fell last year for the first time ever. And there are so many options for people to watch television over the internet. There's so many ways for people to watch TV on Amazon Prime, on Netflix, on Hulu Plus. I mean, these are just really, really easy and cheap options to get television shows. And so I think that if you're in the position of an HBO or CBS, you're looking at this and you're saying, wait a minute, like people are moving away from the cable bundle that we have relied on for distribution. We need to find other ways to get our content in front of the eyeballs of people, particularly young people who are going to be customers for the longest period of time. Oh. And for that reason, they're looking now at providing direct products to people over the internet.
By my count, there are about 8 zillion different cable channels available to us. Are these really significant ones to fall here, HBO and CBS?
I think they're really significant ones to fall, and for good reason. You are seeing the biggest networks move first. HBO is the most critically acclaimed network on television. CBS is the most watched network on television. So these are big guys, and I think that if you continue to see unbundling happen, it's going to be the biggest networks that do the best. Because right now, when you are paying for a bundle that includes 200 channels, that means that the least watched channels, your VH1s and MTV2s and things like this, are going to get a guaranteed stream of money from your cable bill every single month, no matter how many people watch their shows. And that guaranteed stream is going to go away if fewer people are subscribing to cable.
Now, the third shoe to drop, I guess, people are wondering, what about ESPN? Is there any thought that they might uncouple themselves from cable?
This is an enormously important question, and it really goes to the issue of sports. Sports is the glue holding together the cable bundle right now. That's why live sports are so valuable, why the average cost of a year's worth of NBA rights, which ESPN and TNT Turner recently renewed, tripled from $900 million to $2.6 billion a few weeks ago. Sports is holding everything together. It's the one thing that's live that people have to watch live, where the social currency is live, and that means that you can sell live advertising around it. I think that for this reason, ESPN is not going to offer anytime soon something that is too competitive with ESPN, the product. They make way too much money with the cable bundle. I can see them experimenting potentially with expanding the option, expanding the number of sports that they stream live, maybe a few more college games here, a few more NBA games there. But I would not counsel anybody to expect an ESPN Go, an ESPN sort of on free over the – not free, but allowed over the Internet anytime soon.
So looking at the future of what this might look like from the consumer right now, there's not a lot of choice. You can take all the cable, or if you don't do that, you can just go with a Netflix or a Hulu and get what you can from there. But are we going to move toward a point where you've got a Netflix subscription and an HBO subscription and CBS and this, and then it's this bewildering a la carte thing where you have to remember different passwords and pay a bill for 30 different stations that you want to watch?
Right. I mean, to an enormous extent, the wonder of the cable bundle is that, A, it's easy. Once you get past the enormous amount of money you have to spend, it is extremely easy to simply turn on your television and know that everything is prepaid for. And also, there's the argument that given bundling economics, it makes each individual channel cheaper than it would otherwise be if you had to buy it a la carte. I think that people are already, in a small way, sort of building this mega bundle. There are lots of people who pay for cable, who pay for Netflix, who also pay for Hulu Plus, who are also exploring the option of maybe getting an Amazon Prime account, which gives them even more television to watch. So right now, you're seeing a lot of bloat. And I think that in the next few years, what you're going to see is there are going to be enough good options for watching really great television that doesn't require you to get a cable subscription, that a lot of young people who right now are just kind of used to not having cable because they're poor, because they're single, for whatever reason, they don't have the money or the need to pay a lot of money for the whole kit and caboodle, that they're just going to sort of stick with a la carte and piece together their television experience from HBO and Netflix.
Right. Even before this news from HBO and CBS, there was concern from cable companies about the people you were talking about, the people who've never had cable, and then what seems like growing ranks of cord cutters who have canceled their cable subscriptions and as you said, done a la carte types of things. Even before this news, how worrisome was that for the cable companies?
I think that the story that has to be told before we get to the worrying is that television right now is one of the best businesses in America. The media companies, that's the people who own the networks, who own the rights to the shows that you love, they are fantastically rich. Disney and Time Warner and 21st Century Fox, these are enormously rich companies with huge profit margins. And then you look at the companies who are providing the distribution pipes, Comcast and Time Warner Cable and Verizon. These are enormously rich companies too. So the television industry, if you look at profits, is doing fantastically well and is in no immediate danger of slipping. 100 million people subscribe to cable. I think that it might never be a higher number. I think we might have hit peak cable, and that you're going to see this the younger generation pick up cable a lot slower than the older generations die off, essentially. And so I think that that is going to be the long-term crisis for the cable and television industry. But I don't want to be alarmist and suggest that any time in, say, the next year, we're going to see some dramatically terrible numbers in an industry which is the envy of almost any other industry in America.
Now, how about a network station like CBS where some people are still watching it on antennas without paying a monthly fee at all if they don't want to? How do they benefit from doing some kind of direct streaming for a fee option?
Very, very few people are doing this, and particularly very, very few people are doing this in the sort of younger generation. You know, there was a company called Aereo, which was shut down by the Supreme Court, which very cleverly was trying to help people buy antennas and then use a technology to stream broadcast network shows, NBC, Fox, ABC, CBS. To their tablets, to whatever device they wanted. That was shut down. And now CBS in today's announcement, essentially said this is what we're going to do for our own content. We're going to try to make it available live on whatever device you want if you pay us $6 a month. And then we'll also open up a library of all of our past stuff. So every episode of The Big Bang Theory, episodes of Cheers, things like this. So I think that what I'm really interested, actually, in seeing how many people want this product. We don't really have anything like it right now, where a popular broadcast network is selling all of its stuff over the internet without a cable subscription. There's no history to look at.
We're speaking with Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, about the news that both HBO and CBS will begin offering their programs online without a cable subscription.
Yeah, and we'd like to hear from you on this at 800-642-1234. Do you think this signals the end of cable as we know it? Now that you don't need cable to get HBO, for instance, will you be tempted to cut the cord? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're back with Atlantic senior editor Derek Thompson talking about the news that both HBO and CBS will provide their content for streaming online, meaning you won't need cable to watch their stuff.
There's been a lot of hype about this, maybe signaling the end of cable. We'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think this is a big change? Do you currently pay for cable, or did you cut the cord, or never get into cable in the first place? How do you watch TV then? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to Steve with us in Glendale. Steve, hi.
Hello, how you guys doing?
Good. What's your story?
Well, we cut the cord in March, my wife and I. She's an avid television watcher, and I'm not, so I didn't want to pay the cable company, and we patched together a number of devices, including Roku boxes, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Windows Media Server, and we've essentially replaced in our house a 4 television DVR system.
So hold on, Steve. Your wife is the TV watcher. Is she happy with this cobbled-together arrangement?
So far, so good. We do have some challenges with the broadcast antenna going to our home computer. But she's giving it a try. She recognizes that I think it's about $300 to put the whole system together, and that's not many months of broadcast television, not much for AT&T U-verse cost.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Interesting story. But I wonder, Derek, you got to do a lot of stuff. He had to put a lot of things together. You don't just call the cable dude to come in and do this stuff for you. Is everyone going to be willing to go to that much effort?
I think it's pretty clear that everyone's not. It's fantastic when people have the ingenuity to do this kind of thing. But again, like we talked about earlier, one of the advantages of cable is that you pay one bill a month and you get everything automatically, and it's right there. I say automatically. Obviously, there's enough hassles that people have with their television service that Comcast and Time Warner Cable are rated among the least favorite companies in America because of their customer service. So things can go wrong, but it's significantly more convenient than having to cobble things together. That said, I do think that younger people today who maybe have even grew up with cable are used to sort of cobbling things together. They're used to sort of navigating markets with choices. And so they might be just as willing as the last caller to try to make something work in order to save money rather than spend what they see as an unfair amount and be in a place of convenience for it.
Thanks for that call. Before we get back to our callers, though, Derek, I wanted to ask one big question mark is HBO said they're going to stream something for a fee. It doesn't seem as though they've said we're going to stream exactly what you can watch live on HBO right now for a fee.
To be perfectly clear, HBO was not clear at all about what exactly HBO Go outside of the cable bundle is going to look like. HBO Go it alone, as people say. The understanding is that it will probably include live or nearly live television, that it will include a healthy library of its past shows, although it's not entirely clear it will include all shows or all seasons of all shows. So you're right. We don't even know what the price of this thing is going to be. You know, HBO is a $15 premium over on top of your cable bill. $15 is already almost twice as expensive as Netflix right now. And so it remains to be seen, A, what HBO Go It Alone actually offers, and B, whether people actually decide that $15 or whatever they charge is worth what they provide. So there are a lot of unknowns here, and I think we do need to see how these Go It Alone channels play out before making too rash predictions.
Back to our callers now. We've got Peggy on the line in Black River Falls. Peggy, hi.
Hi. I live in a rural area, so therefore cable is not allowed in our area because they don't do it to small towns and rural areas. And so I do watch CBS on the internet free right now. Does that mean that it's going to be charged for?
I'm not exactly sure what the caller is watching television on.
Peggy, I want to ask. I'm a little confused, too. You can't see a live stream of what's on CBS. So do you just go on and watch archived episodes or something?
Yes. You just go to CBS.com, and all the shows are archived, so then you can just watch last week's show or last night's show.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call, Peggy. So, Derek, she's wondering if this, if she has to pay for a live stream, is that going to maybe take away the free options that some networks currently provide?
I don't know for sure. It's possible that they'll cut some of the things that they're offering for free in order to increase the value of the product that's paid. But as I understand it, the CBS streaming service is going to be separate. And, you know, one of the purposes of it is to allow people to watch TV live so that, you know, the caller is absolutely right. A certain number of days after a Good Wife episode is over, or a certain number of hours, CBS will put it on their website for people to watch it. This will allow people, this new streaming option would allow people to watch The Good Wife essentially live so that they could not have a cable bundle but still have that conversation with their friends on Monday to say, can you believe what happened?
Peggy, thanks for the call. We'll go to Joe in Eau Claire now. Joe, hi. Joe, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, Joe, yeah, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I just had kind of a thought and wanted to get your guys' feedback. I think a lot of people have cable internet just because of the speed, and now if we're downloading or streaming high-definition TV, a lot of people are going to use cable internet. What is the cable companies going to start doing as far as are they going to start throttling down the speed and making it problematic for people like they already seem to do with a lot of use of people? So I think that's kind of a concern that I'm kind of wondering about, since cable companies and cable internet will still have us over the barrel and we may end up still paying the same amount of money in the long run.
Interesting, Joe. Thanks for the call. So, yeah, in a lot of cases, the same company controls our cable TV and our cable internet.
Look, this is a fabulous point. It is extremely important for people to realize that when we pay a cable company or a satellite company, a telco company, for television, we typically pay them also for internet too. And these new products are coming over the internet. So we're going to pay for some sort of connection, some sort of distribution, no matter what. And it's absolutely within the right and perhaps reasonable for companies like Comcast and Time Warner Cable, if they see that fewer customers are signing up for their cable option, to fix the price of their internet option in order to maintain their profit margin. You know, we've seen a little bit of this already, and certainly the companies, they make a lot more money from internet than they do from selling cable, because they don't have, when they sell cable, they have to pay the entertainment companies whose networks make up the bundle. So, you know, again, this is one of those things where we don't exactly know how this is going to play out, because these products, HBO Go It Alone and the CBS streaming access network over the internet, we don't know how these are going to sell and how they're going to take away from future demand for the cable bundle. But we are a little bit, as the caller said, over a barrel. We do have to get internet connection from somewhere, and it is typically an oligopoly, very few companies that own the pipes when it comes to delivering that internet access.
Joe, thanks for that call. And that reminds me about another weird angle on this. HBO makes this announcement, we're going to go have this direct option. It might hurt cable companies like Time Warner Cable, which, as I understand, owns HBO.
No, Time Warner Cable and Time Warner are two separate companies.
Ah, okay.
So yeah, right. So Time Warner Cable it controls the pipes. They're like Comcast, and then Time Warner is the entertainment company, which owns TNT and TBS and HBO, and they're more like, you know, Disney, owning the Disney Channel and ESPN. But this brings up an important point that's probably you know, good to end on or nearly end on, which is that when we say television, we often refer to three very separate things. There's television, your TV box. There's television, like I Love Television, which is the entertainment companies, media companies who own the networks. And then sometimes when we say we pay for television, we're really talking about writing a check to an infrastructure company like Time Warner Cable or Comcast. So television is a very complicated ecosystem. And because it's so complicated, this is one of the reasons why the bundle has been so slow to break up. We're beginning to see it, and we don't know exactly how it's going to shake out for everybody.
On the cultural side, I mean, we're already moving to streaming, watching when we want, with first DVDs, then streaming. And now maybe with this new system, we might all be watching shows at different times. Does this keep fragmenting our cultural conversation where we're not all showing up on Monday talking about the same thing?
This is a really interesting question. Maybe the most interesting answer is to take the devil's advocate position, which is to say that when you have a cable bundle and every cable-paying household has to pay it, as we've all seen, it's expanded the number of options, the number of channels on that bundle. Everyone wants to get on the bundle because they're guaranteed money from our monthly checks. And so this system has, you know, expanded the number of TV channels from 10 to 20 to now, you know, 200, 300, you know, thousands even when you include the HD options on our TV menu. So it's possible, actually, that going a la carte and forcing companies to stand alone on their own demand and on their own ability to raise money for subscriptions and pay for advertisement and not lean on this massive crutch of the cable bundle could actually shrink the number of options out there, shrink the number of channels, and have this ecosystem controlled by fewer players and not more.
So, Derek, before I let you go, Twin Peaks is going to make a comeback, according to a recent announcement from, I think, Showtime and David Lynch. Is there a show that you would like to see resurrected?
There is a show I'd like to see resurrected, and that show is called Seinfeld. And I know that this is a strange thing to say because Seinfeld did end, and it certainly had a long enough time to establish itself. And it's not like Twin Peaks where you know, it only was living for two seasons. But I do think it was the best show on television. I do think that you know, all of those characters would be welcome back, and I think it would be absolutely hilarious, at least for one season, for NBC to pay whatever exorbitant amount of money Jerry Seinfeld would demand for a comeback, to just try it out once more. I certainly would tune in, even if I had to pay for it as a standalone internet channel.
Wow, that's an interesting answer, Derek. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
I've been speaking with Derek Thompson. He's senior editor at The Atlantic, talking about the news that HBO and CBS are both creating online streaming services. 24 years ago, Twin Peaks captured the attention of TV viewers and became an unlikely cultural phenomenon with a cult following that has lasted to this day. Here's the scene that kicked off the opening mystery of the show.
Sheriff, it's Pete Martell up at the mill. I'm going to transfer to the phone on the table by the red chair. The red chair against the wall, at the little table with the lamp on it, the lamp that we moved from the corner, the black phone, not the brown phone.
Morning, Pete. Harry.
She's dead. Wrapped in plastic.
And the she in question there? None other than Laura Palmer. Twin Peaks itself has been dead since its second season and a follow-up prequel movie. But last week, creator David Lynch and cable network Showtime released a surprise announcement. The show's going to make a comeback in 2016.
Now we want to throw this to you to share something with us. Is there a TV show, recent or not, that you would like to see resurrected today? Call and make the case that a cherished show should make a comeback at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And also, what do you think of Twin Peaks making a comeback? Can't wait, or should they have left it where it was? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post over on the Central Time Facebook page.
We've got Jerry in Stockbridge to start things off for us. Jerry, what do you think?
I would love myself to see the sci-fi series Firefly resurrected. I know they kind of tied up some loose ends with the movie Serenity, but it was still left pretty much open-ended. They could certainly resume it.
Well, Jerry, I'm going to tell you, for this segment, I made a list of one show, and that was it, Firefly. I would love to see that make a comeback. We were on the same page. What did you love about the show?
It was very much human stories. Mm.
Jerry, thanks so much, and some great characters. I even pulled a clip from the show. Let's give a listen. This is Mal Reynolds, our hero, meeting a future unreliable crewmate, Jane Cobb.
Well, looks can be deceiving.
Not as deceiving as a low-down, dirty deceiver.
Well said. Wasn't that well said, Zoe?
Had a kind of poetry to it, sir.
And a lot of the show had a kind of poetry to it. Thank you so much for starting us off, Jerry. Great suggestion.
And I would see that Firefly and raise you one Babylon 5.
See, I never watched Babylon 5, so I could make myself happy by just going back and watching the original. You'd like to see it come back.
I would like to see it come back. I have watched it since then, and I thought, it's not quite as good, but I loved it at the time.
And you want to see where it goes, though, from
where
they left
off. I want to see where it goes.
That's where I am with Firefly.
I miss the characters.
Me too, with Firefly. Okay.
All right, let's see what else other people have to say. Jason is with us now from Marengo. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
What do you think? Who do you vote for?
I was so happy to hear about Twin Peaks coming back. It was like Christmas for me. But there was a Showtime show from a few years back, Huff, the Hank Azaria show. I would love to see that come back.
Yeah, he was a psychiatrist, and lots of bad things happened in that show. But it was Hank Azaria, you said. Yeah, he was an excellent actor in that.
That was a very good show.
All right, Jason, thanks so much for that suggestion. I don't know what to think about Twin Peaks myself. Like, in some ways I'm excited, in some ways I'm like, I don't know, where do they take it from here? But I don't know, David Lynch, he'll do something interesting anyway.
Right, I mean, a lot of people would have said Star Wars as far as movies, and they did come back, and then...
yeah,
exactly. That's the danger we're talking about here.
We're blocking that out, yeah.
All right, Pete joins us next in Milwaukee. Hi, Pete.
Hey there, how are you folks doing today?
Good, thanks.
I think they're bringing back a show like On the Family. Obviously, a bunch of the actors are passed on, but something like that dealt with race relations and brought those kinds of attitudes to the forefront in a comedic way that we can laugh at those situations and realize how silly we are for having those kinds of ideas. I think that it was revolutionary, and something like that maybe would get people talking and would bring people together. And I think Milwaukee needs that more than almost anywhere else I can think of right now.
All right. Thank you for that, Pete. And another thing about All in the Family, a working class family, mm-hmm. which reminds me of, you know, the Roseanne Barr show. Are there many other shows right now that feature real working class families?
We did a segment on that a while back with Robert Thompson. And yeah, they can be few and far between. The All in the Family would have to be a reboot,
yeah.
I think. Not
the new characters.
Exactly.
Obviously.
New actors, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Well, thanks. Interesting suggestion. Jeff is with us now in Wauwatosa. Jeff, hi.
Hello.
What's your nomination for a show to bring back?
Millennium. An X-Files spinoff from the late 90s starring Lance Henriksen.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really unique show. I've never seen anything like it. It was kind of a police procedural, but had a lot of supernatural kind of... It was not like anything else on.
Jeff, interesting. I remember that show. Lance Henriksen has one of the most amazing voices out there. That's one of the things that stuck with me about that. And I'm always happy to see him in movies, too. Huh, I wonder if he could be brought back for that role.
Interesting that Jeff wants Millennium back and not X-Files back.
Yeah.
Which I can make a case for that. I would watch that.
Yeah, and I think X-Files did what it needed to do. I don't know that I'd want to... You know, watch that again.
But it's still out there, Rob.
The truth?
Yeah.
It is out there.
It's out there. We need to come back to it and find it. All right, let's go to Bernice in Madison. Hi, Bernice.
Hi. Yeah, I want to see Prison Break come back.
Prison Break.
I loved it. Yeah, even though I'm a 75-year-old woman, there was something about that. I know it sounds ridiculous, but for somebody like me to want to see Prison Break, but I loved it.
Huh. Yeah. I remember the ads were all over the place for a while. I never watched the show. It seemed like they kept finding new prisons to break out of, as far as I know. But I've heard good things about it. That's one I never checked out. And obviously, I think the actors are probably still young enough that they could bring it back.
Right, yeah, thanks. They could still break out of another prison somewhere.
There's always more prisons. They could bring it to Wisconsin, maybe. Bernice, thanks a lot for the call.
Great. Well, thank you for that. We're going to go next to Mike. Mike is with us in La Crosse. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What do you vote for?
Married with Children with Ed O'Neill.
Yeah. So you'd have to snatch him away from, what is he on, Modern Family?
Modern Family, yeah. And Katie Sagal from the
or,
Sons of Anarchy.
Or do you want a whole new cast?
No, definitely same cast, Christina Applegate and their son. But, you know, I watched that growing up, and then as I got older and married, I guess I can appreciate it a little more.
Hopefully not too much. It probably doesn't hit too close to home for you.
Oh, not too close, but...
Yeah, I watched that one, too. What I remember about that show is that my mother never wanted me to watch that show.
Yeah.
But it was a good show. I stand by that. And Kara on Facebook has said, I would like to see a new Muppet show. But she adds that probably would not go well.
Well, I know. Since Kermit's facelift, I don't know if that's really going to... Oh, no, wait. I could see. I mean, there are people doing the voices, obviously. And they did bring back Muppet movies. We were talking about that earlier, Veronica. So, I mean...
It's possible.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
The Muppets have a bit of new life in them again.
Definitely. All right, thanks for that suggestion. We've got Emily with us in Clinton now. Emily, hi.
Hi. Say, I would love to see some cartoons like those from the 80s.
Which ones?
You know, there's just nothing on like that anymore.
Smurfs, right?
Yep, the Smurfs, Shira and He-Man, you know, anything along those lines. Thundercats.
I don't know, man. They were in some ways of the time. I watched them then. I don't know if they need to make a comeback at this time.
Smurfs would be really good. No. Emily
maybe.
And I disagree with you on that, Rob.
All right, well. I respect your opinions.
Okay, let's go to one more quick call from Eric and Endeavor. Hi, Eric.
Hey, the greatest show ever was the Andy Griffith Show, and they should bring it back with the original cast members because they get great ratings with the zombie twist.
A zombie twist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they both, Andy Griffith and Ron Howard, both had key roles or moments, at least, on Arrested Development, a show that was brought back after death by Netflix. So I don't know. I could see it. I mean, two core characters for the show. I don't know. I don't know if you'd really zombify it, though.
Well, it could be. It could be. You might be onto something there, Eric. I like that. Hopefully someone is listening to this show and jotting down all these ideas.
Yeah, we're copywriting these as we go, by the way. Right, Chris? You're hitting the whatever the copyright service website. you had one, Veronica. We wanted to get into that. You and our boss, Cheryl Gasser, said...
Mine is predictable, and producer Chris Molina mocks me for this. But I do. I want to see Gilmore Girls come back, Chris. I don't care what you say. It's a really good show, and a lot of people like it.
All right. Well, you can keep this conversation going, by the way. Share your TV shows you would like to see resurrected over at the Central Time Facebook page, or let us know your thoughts on the comeback of Twin Peaks in just about a year and a half or so, it looks like.
Well, thanks a lot for your calls. You can keep on sharing on the Central Time Facebook page.